Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman, great to be with you again for another week. Tech Talk is our chance to get together and explore the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. And of course, we always love to hear from you. If you want to get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Voice messages or just a good old-fashioned written email is always welcome. This week, we'll be hearing some of the best presentations and talks from RNIB's recent Inclusive Design for Sustainability conference in Glasgow. How will AI shape our future? And what difference could wearable technology make to the lives of blind and partially sighted people? There were some really interesting presentations and talks and keynotes at that event, so that's coming up this week. We're looking forward to bringing you a few highlights. Joining me are Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Welcome in to all of you. Hubert, I'll come to you first. What's going on with you?
New gadget alert from me. I've bought myself to try out the Plaud Note Pin Recorder. So this voice recorder is a size of a very small flash drive, and I mean very small, and it reportedly claims to be able to, well, voice record and then use AI in its app to transcribe and summarize recordings. So quite a good device for attending lectures or physical meetings, or maybe if you go to speeches and you can record them and then get kind of the key points out of it. That's what I've been currently playing with at the moment. It's got it's a magnetic recorder. It can be attached to different things, and there's different types of attachments in the box where you can attach it as a wristband or as a clip-on. It's quite an interesting device. Comes with a built-in app. One warning about it: screen recognition on the iPhone, at least, is going to be your best friend for it.
Yeah, I've heard a bit about this. So a few unlabeled buttons and, I guess, the classic accessibility stuff that we often hear about in apps then.
It says image quite a lot, which is a bit confusing. It's still accessible-ish without screen recognition, but say turning it on simply makes it a bit less frustrating and a bit more straightforward from my very limited experience at the moment. I'm still kind of playing around with it. Another thing to note about the NotePin device itself, the way to record it is, there is a touch panel on the recorder itself, and you need to put your finger on it and hold it until it vibrates. So I'd say it takes a bit of time to get used to where that is on the device, even though it's quite small. But because it's the size of a thumb, pretty much, you can more often than not place your finger in the correct position, sort of thing.
Just to kind of summarize this then. So it's a voice recorder, but with AI transcriptions and summaries and those kind of things. Is this the one where you can record your phone calls as well, so you can attach it to your...
Apparently so, but I'm not really sure how that works. That is something new to me. I've heard this mentioned regarding the Plaud Note recorder, which is different to the pin.
Okay.
But I'm not fully sure yet exactly how that works, if that can be done indeed with the pin.
Are you concerned about privacy in any way with this? Because for me, a voice recorder that's kind of sending everything you... Well, it's not sending everything you say to AI, to be fair. I think you've got to initiate the transcript and the AI parts. You've got to tell it what you want. But still, a little device that you can just put in, you know, discreetly record something and then send it off to AI, get transcripts, get key points, get summaries. It sounds like a Black Mirror episode to me, this waiting to happen.
I was going to say there's a Black Mirror episode and all this. And I think the point to this, to mention with this, is quite simple in the sense that, as with many technologies out there, every technology can be used in a way which it shouldn't, but I think the key you want to focus on is there are benefits and there are drawbacks, and it kind of all depends as to whether this technology works for the scenarios that it's ideally recommended for. So, you know, if you attend a lot of virtual meetings, I'd say maybe this recorder is simply, you know, not really for you. But if you attend a lot of physical meetings in the office and you struggle to keep track of what's mentioned, which in some meetings I have found myself doing, I think it could be worth a try, because you are in control and you get to generate these summaries. If you don't want to, you don't have to. But then obviously, you know, it depends how much use you'll find this recorder. It's not the cheapest. It's about 160 something pounds. So it's a budget one that you need to consider.
I was going to say, I don't think I have a need for this, but I do because my memory is terrible. But like you said, yeah, I spend most of my time on virtual meetings, so I guess it wouldn't really work for me. But yeah, still, I'm intrigued. Yeah, keep us posted with how you get on with that. Jackie, I come to you. I think I know what you're going to say from when we've been talking off air.
Yes. There has been, well, for me anyway, there has been Look and Tell has finally landed on my Meta Ray-Ban glasses. Now,
I just
want to say, right, yes, I'm positive. I do want to say right at the outset, though, that this is not the case for everybody. It's got nothing to do with VPNs or anything like that, because I took that off my phone many months ago. I gave up on VPN because sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And then there was a rumor going around that Meta were, blocking that. So I took the VPN off some time ago. So it isn't anything to do with that. But yesterday I looked in on my glasses just to see, as you do periodically, to see if there was an update. And I got a notification when I put them on that said, Meta AI has now arrived. So I went in and I enabled it because it asked you to do that. And sure enough, instead of it saying, I am a voice assistant or words to that effect, it actually told me what it could see in front of me. So, of course, I've been around the house trying out different things. I went outside into the garden last night when it stopped raining. And, basically it is working. I still think the other AIs, likes of ChatGPT and Ally and the Gemini, I think Gemini is top of the pops for me at the moment, but I think they're all probably better. You're going to get better results. People were asking me yesterday, can it read things to you? If you ask it to read a portion of text, does it just summarize it? In effect, it does. I tried it with a leaflet just from a local grocery store that came in, and I tried asking what the offers were. You've got to be very specific when you ask it questions. You know, it's not quite as random as the others, but it's great. But I still think there's a way to go yet. But just bear in mind that it isn't available for everybody. The way that this is being rolled out, in my view, is a bit weird because, you know, you would think if it was a rollout of a software update like this, that everybody would get it when they open their glasses and whatever. But it doesn't seem to be that way. Most people I know and have spoken to still don't seem to have it. So that is a bit strange. It's a bit weird, really, the way Meta's been doing this. But hey ho, if you have it, use it.
Yeah, it is a weird rollout. It is definitely first, because I got the software update yesterday to say that as part of the release notes of the software, because I was joking around, you know, are you sure it's coming? But it definitely is. We know that now, because there's a software update which specifically says in the release notes, users in the UK can now access Meta AI Look and Tell. And also a few days ago, I got an email from Meta with an updated privacy policy, which I didn't read. Which I, of course, read in full and agreed to.
Of course.
But as part of that email, it did say that the reason for the updated privacy policy was that soon Meta AI would be able to use your camera on the glasses in the UK. So it is coming. But I've got the software update. I've installed that. It's installed successfully, but I still don't have the Look and Tell aspect of it. So it's obviously a component of the software update, but not entirely dependent on it. So yeah, it's a strange one. Natalie, what's new with you?
I suppose a few little things for me. I also got the email saying that the Meta Ray-Ban's update was coming, but it was diplomatically vague. It was just like, it's coming, and I'm like, great. So I don't know when it's going to land for me. The one small thing that I've had a look at this week was I downloaded an app, which turned out not to be accessible. You get that the classic thing of direct touch area. I'm like, fabulous. Don't know what that is. But there's now an option on VoiceOver to turn on direct touch mode. So I turned that on, and as far as I could tell, it did absolutely nothing. So I don't know what the point of it is, or if that was a really, really inaccessible app, and maybe there'll be other ones that have that option. But yeah, we'll see. I got nowhere with that. Don't know if any of you guys have tried it.
No, I don't think I've tried that one. It is weird, this direct touch thing, because in some apps it works, and then this is the idea of like being able to pass commands, kind of bypass VoiceOver and go straight to the app, isn't it? That's the idea of direct touch.
Quite often this is used in games. There's certain games where you've got direct touch and you enable it, and it turns an inaccessible game into a more accessible game. So I've had positive experiences with it, but I presume it's not something that works with every app, but I have found it working quite well with certain games.
Well, that's good. Like I said, I've only tried it on the one app because it was just a coincidence that this is an app I downloaded since that feature has been introduced. So I won't give up on it yet. You know, if it happens again, I'll definitely give it another go.
Yeah. All right. Well, stick with us. This is Tech Talk. Now, our first presentation from the IDS conference in Glasgow, where panellists consider the life-changing impacts that AI could help bring about in the future.
Good afternoon, everyone, and fantastic to be here in Glasgow this week for this event. As everyone has discussed already, technology is advancing at a rapid pace, and quite frankly, literally faster than any other time in history. And AI is clearly at the forefront of that. And we've got new tools, new models, new technologies all the time being developed and being released on a daily basis. And it is, quite frankly, really overwhelming to try and keep up to date with that. So hopefully today we're going to try and demystify that a little bit with this panel of experts in front of me. So in terms of an introduction to myself, my name is Aidan Foreman. I'm the Director of Technology at RNIB. I've got the pleasure of being joined by four experts today. We've got Jody, we've got Seema, we've got Gus, and we've got Maria. We're going to spend the next sort of 30 minutes or so just having a conversation about AI, thinking about inclusive AI, and also how we can make accessibility and sustainability built into those AI platforms. We're going to try and unpack and demystify that. So we're just going to go over now and do some intros into our panel. So if I just pass over to Maria, who's going to go first with an intro.
Sure. Hi. I don't know whether that works. Okay. Hi there. So I'm Maria. My background, I'm a computer scientist by training. My background is in probabilistic machine learning, and I'm currently working at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard towards employing AI methods to genetics and trying to unravel mechanisms that would actually help towards personalized medicine.
Thank you, Maria. Next, we're going to come to Seema.
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Seema Flower. I'm the founder of Blind Ambition, which is a disability training consultancy, but I also have lived experience of vision impairment. I have an eye condition called retinitis pigmentosa, progressive condition, so now down to 2% vision. So really making use of every AI technology that I can.
Thank you, Seema. Over to Jody.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Jody Rogers, and I'm the Chief AI Officer at Transverity, where I'm responsible for our business and go-to-market strategy. And Transverity, we're a Microsoft consultancy partner, so my role is really to support organisations with their AI strategy and adopting AI in a responsible way.
Thank you, Jody. Over to Gus.
Hi there. I'm Gus Giametta. I also go by Gus. Both are cool. I'm the director of our concept engineering team within the Reality Labs organisation. At Meta, my team focuses on early prototypes and mock-ups of devices in our wearables and AI roadmap. My technical background is physics and electrical engineering, although I've been leading teams for some time now, so I haven't put on that thinking cap as much as maybe I'd like. But my personal interest in this space is my own experience with congenital cataracts and glaucoma, and my mom's blindness as well as vision issues in my family, including my son. So I'm really excited to be here today, and thanks for posting.
Thank you, Gus. So as we've said, we've got 30 minutes for this discussion, and then we're going to jump into some Q&A. So as we're going through the discussion, if you're thinking of any questions that you'd like to ask, please don't be shy. At the end, we'll get a chance to fire some microphones around, and we can obviously get to those questions. So
let's start off with a bit of the bigger picture. Obviously, you know, some of these questions are going to be quite wide-ranging, but let's just start off from the very top. So how do we see AI contributing to a more inclusive and sustainable future? I'm going to come to Maria first, if that's okay. Maria, what's your thoughts on that, please?
Well, as you said, there's been quite a development in AI through the past years. To be honest, my background is... I forgot to say at the beginning that I'm visually impaired myself. I was born with persistent hyperplastic primary vitreous, and due to which I have no sight from the right-hand side. I just forgot to mention that. With respect to AI and sustainability, the thing is that lately there have been so many tools that have been developed. But to be honest, they're towards what they call neurotypical individuals. And that includes that's a term that I still cannot understand So when it comes to sustainability, the idea is that they wish to develop methods that are actually easy to be digested and also to be employed, you know, at the with respect to some time frame. So in terms of, I think that I will leave it there.
Thank you, Maria. Same question to you, really, Seema. How do you see AI kind of contributing to a more inclusive future?
I think from my experience and the people that I support in the AI sector, I think it's making our lives very, very inclusive in terms of socially and again, bringing the world to us to an extent, but also improving all aspects of our lives, basically, just make it generally more inclusive, make it easier to be able to do everyday independent tasks that we weren't able to do.
Thank you, that's really brilliant. Gus, over to you. What's your thoughts on that one, please?
Yeah, I'll echo some of the other comments. The big one's independence. A really fun example I saw this was audio description in movies, right? I think it's brilliant that more content today is audio described, but of course we can do better. And I like to watch movies. I like to watch movies with my parents. I'm watching a James Bond movie with your mother and then trying to audio describe certain scenes, what Mr. Bond is doing. Not ideal, right? Some things I think it's better that people have independence and the ability to get the information themselves, even if someone they love is willing to describe it for them. So I think it's independence, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
Really good analogy. And actually, yeah, Mr. Bond is not somebody you want to be audio described in front of your parents.
Also with your young daughter as well. I think it's really, that's very true. You're absolutely right. It gives too much detail sometimes. Yeah.
Jodi, lastly, over to you.
I think we've been teed up quite nicely for this conversation from a lot of the presentations already this morning. I think one of the things that's already been touched on is around fairness. And I think AI can actually be leveraged as a tool to really identify and address biases. So I'm really excited to see kind of how that plays out. And then also just not only using AI, but also technology in general as an enabler. And I know we're going to talk about some examples of how we're seeing it being used. But I think if we think about the innovations that we've seen in the last 2 years alone since the creation of generative AI, I think it's really exciting to think, you know, what we're going to see over the next few years in the future.
Absolutely. And just thinking about that, actually, I have the pleasure every day of working in the RNIB and obviously seeing some of these opportunities come to life. But if we just kind of dive into that right now, you know, for the panelists here, really, Maria, will come to you first. But what do you think in terms of biggest opportunities for AI for people, you know, with who are blind or got low vision? You know, what do you think are those massive opportunities?
To begin with, as speakers mentioned earlier, though, I mean, that's it's like the world is our oyster because AI is kind of tailored again to what they call, normal or whatever people. So it's about time that it started to get inclusive from bottom up. I mean, there are so many AI researchers, and usually AI from the researcher point of view is not exactly inclusive. So, and as Dr. Wenson mentioned at the beginning, when people per se, when disabled people are not there towards the development of a method, it's very likely that this method is not tailored to people that are going to employ it. So I would say that AI, the whole progress of AI should also rely on people that face this kind of disabilities. So there are so many tools that we can employ.
For example, there have been, I'm working on the research side of things, and there are these big conferences working towards, you know, developing ML machine learning methods towards whichever direction, actually. And the thing is that usually, to begin with, at the very beginning, those even where those methods are presented, they are not friendly for people, you know, for disabled people, for people that are blind or visually impaired. There are the papers, the technical reports that people write, for example, to begin with, they are not. People that are colorblind cannot even parse them, just because they employ very combinations of colors that are not, that are indistinguishable. So, for example, we mentioned that, and now we do have an algorithm, at least at these conferences, that goes through the papers and finds out, picks out the points that the colors are not, should not be like that, and provides feedbacks to the authors so that they can actually make them accessible to the whole community. So that's a very small idea, a very small topic towards, for example, AI has started improving on. And I'm sure that there are so many other opportunities as well, so long as we keep on interacting with everyone and keep on asking questions. And if I may, another important aspect is not to pretend, actually, that you know, we are going to help people with stuff, but to be open and have people to be open towards actually realizing the mistakes that we've been doing towards developing methods, towards building the whole AI process and project or whatever, and starting from scratch in many areas.
Thank you, Maria. That's really great. And obviously, Seema, I know from chatting to you last week, you're definitely using a lot of these products already. You know, the same question to you in terms of the opportunities, but maybe you could share some of your use cases already.
Yeah, I will do. So basically, I think obviously the technology is giving us a level playing field and maybe putting us more on an equal footing. So say, for example, Alexa's a brilliant example of getting instant information straight away, you know. Then I've been using something which is called the WhatsApp version of ChatGPT. And for me, it's been brilliant because I can actually just input that other, you know, just saying, you know, hey, Siri, WhatsApp, ChatGPT, ask the question. It comes up straight in my WhatsApp answers. And that's instantaneous. And that gives an example that we're not being left behind, because historically we are. We are usually an afterthought. And I think we need to be, in like we said earlier on, you know, it needs to be, access needs to be from the ground upwards, not just an afterthought. Another piece of technology I've been playing with at the moment is called the Claude AI pin, basically. And that allows you to actually have an AI assistant which records your meetings, and then basically it goes up to the cloud. It's a private cloud account, and then that can be emailed over to you, in an email summary, or put it into action points, or make a map for you, whatever it needs to do. I've actually got it here, I can show it to you. Actually, it's a really small piece of equipment, which is really, really quite neat, actually. If you want to describe that to people.
Yeah, so it's a really small dongle type device. It's about an inch long, and it's black, and like a capsule, a big tablet effectively. And a really small device. And I'm guessing that it's the rope around it allows it to be
put around your neck.
Around your neck or your wrist, I guess.
Your wrist, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Just gonna pass it.
Thank you.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much. And then Gus, over to you, just thinking about the meta context on this. Yeah, where do you see the kind of opportunities from an AI perspective for people who are blind or low vision?
I think it's a really exciting and almost boundless space. Dr. Webson in his keynote mentioned the concept of universal design. I'm a strong believer in that as well, because, you know, it's a two-way street. Something that's well-designed that doesn't require one's eyes is not just good for blind and low vision users, it's good for everyone. The Ray-Ban Meta glasses, which I had the pleasure of contributing to a little bit, the AI feature set, which is available in parts of the world and will be available in wider region soon, is in a form factor that's just glasses. Like, it's something that anyone would want to buy. It's a Ray-Ban Headliner or Wayfarer design that was already on the market. I think in contrast to really expensive niche low-volume devices to get really expensive, integrating these features in mainstream devices is something we're going to see more and more of, and it's going to bring everyone up. I think we see other examples of that. The wearable Quadpen that's mentioned is one. I think Apple AirPods recently got certified as hearing aids in the United States, which is huge because the cost of those is order of magnitude less than competitive on the market. And so I think we'll see more devices that can just be used across all the sciences.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, Jody, just thinking forward from a Microsoft perspective, obviously, within R&IB, we've been trying things like Copilot and seeing some really fantastic results. You know, where do you think you see the technology from more of a Microsoft-centric standpoint going?
Yeah, and I think we were really fortunate to work with you on the adoption and kind of rollout of Copilot. And I think making sure that we were really inclusive, not only in the discovery and the kind of design, but also in the adoption of that technology was really powerful. And I wanted to read out a quote, actually, for one of your employees, rather than speaking kind of on their behalf. This is what they said in terms of the impact that Copilot brought for them. They said, "I'm constantly coming across moments where it's like, I can't do that, or this is not working for me, which means I can't complete that task. Whereas now with Copilot, I don't have to worry about it because I know that I can do it. And most of the time I can do it with one prompt and it's like magic." And although AI is definitely not magic, I think when it's harnessed correctly, it can really have powerful impact on people's day-to-day life. And for those who aren't aware, Copilot is basically a kind of employee productivity assistant, so that AI is kind of ingrained in the Microsoft 365 ecosystem. So it can help with things like summarizing your inbox, trying to retrieve different files. And I think from an accessibility perspective, it's compatible with screen readers, and also it has this text-to-speech capability. So some of the benefits were, again, that greater autonomy, feeling like typically it was quite hard to complete digital tasks, but Copilot was making it a lot more simple, and then just saving time so that people could focus on more meaningful work rather than, you know, overcoming accessibility challenges. So I really think that kind of personal assistant type use case is going to be incredibly powerful, and having that kind of text to speech capability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as the multimodal inputs start to become more mainstream, I think actually that's going to be, you know, going to really drive rocket fuel through that. So that's really great. I think there's some, let's just get into that designing element. So we're thinking when we build in these AI products, you know, how can we think about accessibility? So I'm going to actually just mix it up a little bit now and go back to Gus actually and thinking about, you know, what are those key challenges? But maybe let's flip that to be a bit more positive. So what are those opportunities when building products? How do you make sure that AI is designed inclusively from the outset?
Well, I'm gonna channel Dr. Webson again here. I think one big one is just making sure that folks who have lived experience have a seat at the table. My experience in large tech companies working on this stuff is generally not that leadership doesn't care about the problems. It's often they're just not aware or don't have context to it. Luckily enough, within Meta, like some of the really cool multimodal AI feature sets rolling out stemmed off of hackathon projects built by teams of folks that have vision issues. So there was lived experience there, but that's sort of serendipity. I really love the co-design concepts. Meta is also trying to embrace that. And during Google's presentation, I thought there were some really great examples of how that can benefit everyone. I think that in addition to representation, thinking about how these feature sets are good for everyone can help keep them from being buried under a menu somewhere, right? I think closed captioning is a good analogy. The initial development of that was a technology to enable deaf and hard of hearing folks to ingest voice content. But it's fairly widely used across the general population. And so nowadays, to turn deaf features on, it's not buried under 10 menus. It's something that is quite easily usable because everyone uses it. And I imagine that audio-based interfaces and LLM-driven description of visual content can benefit everyone, not just blind visually impaired folks. And if it's mainstream integrated devices like this or the PIN, it'll become much more widespread.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Let's think about some specific barriers around certain aspects of life. So Seema, I'd like to come to you on this one actually, but how can AI really help address the barriers in areas such as things like employment? I know that's something that's very close to your heart. And so just wanted to get your thoughts on that, please.
Well, especially in terms of job search, I think it can help there. I think definitely in terms of actually supporting people, you know, in terms of actually maybe generating a CV, maybe they put their skills in with, you know, sort of raw materials and then generating skills for them, basically, as a CV they can then send on to employers. And maybe in terms of actually being able to audio input your CV or your bio, one hand to write it if you're not able to, it's trying to make that sort of whole process of looking for a job a lot easier. And as we all know, 75% of people who are visually impaired are not working. So, you know, it's trying to make that whole process a lot easier that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Then education, Maria, let's come to you on that one. You know, how do you think that AI could really support the education system and how, you know, blind or low vision students might go through the education system?
Actually, there are too many ways that this can be done. To begin with, we're lucky enough to live at what they called, Western world, whatsoever. That means that kids, students, especially at Europe and US and Canada, they do have access to a lot of tools that kids in the rest of the world might not have. So to begin with, AI could actually be helpful towards a more inclusive world at which tools are developed and can actually be transferred to other countries as well that are less underserved. So there are so many things that AI could provide, like there are already some tools out there, so that screen readers, for example, or common ones, but there are also so many things that could be done in the future. Like So up to now, we used to employ books that are written in Braille so that we can actually parse and learn. So now we don't really need this kind of books in order to read if we want to. So, for example, where in cases that that Braille books are not provided, AI could do the job and help people towards reading. Or and that's, you know, what comes off the top of my head. There, I'm quite sure that there are too many tools that could be employed and could also be discreet if possible, because we do know that people like us, people with visual impairment, too many times are, you know, kind of in the spotlight, but not in the best possible way. So being able to, read a book without actually being the different one, but being, you know, just employ something that your classmates do, that would also be useful.
Yeah, brilliant. So that discreet, but inclusive type approach. Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to some of the ethics and the responsible AI elements now. So Jodie, I'm going to come to you on this, but in terms of, you know, as technology companies build these tools, I think we heard in the keynote, you know, about reaffirming biases and exclusion. Kind of how do we go about when we're implementing these tools within our organizations or using them personally, how do we go about mitigating against those kind of biases?
Yeah, I think it's a very meaty topic. But I think hyperscalers like Microsoft and Google and Amazon are creating kind of great toolkits to be able to support with the implementation of responsible, trustworthy AI. So I think they provide a lot of the tools that organizations hopefully are taking advantage of. And I think when we're implementing AI solutions for other organizations, we have a AI policy now that really talks about how we're doing that based on Microsoft's responsible AI principles. And I think that comes down to a lot of things, whether that's kind of making sure there is that diverse and representative data. We all know that there are biases in the world, but actually being able to leverage AI to kind of audit that. And I think it's really important that with the implementation of technology, it's really not a once and kind of done approach, but we need to review this on an ongoing kind of iterative basis. And then I think we've heard a lot today about inclusive design, but I think it's ensuring that we have diverse teams right from the discovery through to the design, through to the implementation, and then also that providing that feedback loop. So as people are using these tools and systems, that there is a method to be able to provide feedback to constantly kind of improve that. And then I think it's really important that we have kind of explainability and transparency baked into all of the AI systems that we're building so that we can understand how these decisions were made, and we can actually see, you know, what was the path that the solution took to get to that answer. But I think, yeah, it's really important that we think about the entire process right from discovery and
that we're not just leveraging technology and AI for the sake of it, but that we are solving, it was discussed this morning, but that we are, you know, solving problems, you know, helping to make it more accessible for everybody. And we're not just leveraging technology for the sake of it, but we're really thinking about the purpose and why we're actually using AI in the first place.
Absolutely. And then from the Meta perspective, you know, how do you guys think in terms of when you're building these tools and technologies, how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question because there's a trade-off, right? The more access you give, the more rich an experience you can provide a person. But there are really good reasons why we need to put guardrails around things. A great example of this is appearance, right? Like a sighted person can look at this panel and describe what we all look like, including our approximate age, race, what we're wearing, does it look good or not? Did my shirt shrink? Do I have a stain on it? I think I do. If there's good reasons that an AI agent probably should not be trying to make decisions or descriptions about someone's subjective appearance or race or whatnot. But at the same time, if we prevent that information from getting into the hands of a visually impaired person, now we're discriminating against that person because a sighted person can get information. So there aren't easy answers. And there is a team at Meta that focuses on responsible AI and works with the similar group. I think that from my perspective as a hardware engineer, I don't want to just claim that, oh, it's not my team, so I'm not going to worry about it. I will say that the design of our devices does take privacy very heavily into account. For example, the device has a both audible and visual indicator when the camera is on and active. The rollout of many of our AI features, we're being especially conservative about to make sure that we're staying on the right side of local regulations. So I think, yeah, there's trade-offs to it. I think that ultimately, I think societal norms will probably adapt to things that folks maybe aren't comfortable now. The analogy is cell phone cameras. Initially, cell phones with cameras was seen as like, oh my gosh, that's super creepy. But now everyone expects that their phone has one. I think that there will probably be some societal adaption too, but it's a non-trivial and complex question.
Thanks, Chris. And then, Seema, just coming to you really quickly. We discussed last week and we had a little chat, didn't we? And I know I talked to you about what you saw as the kind of the risks around using these tools for yourself. And I just wondered if you wanted to share.
I think in terms of privacy, there is a trade-off, like we say. And when you're visually impaired, you know, you are a little bit more vulnerable, but it's the difficulty is you need the support, don't you? So say, for example, if I was in my own privacy in my own home and I need to work out, you know, the difference between almond milk and normal milk, basically, I'm, you know, making that phone call through Be My Eyes and getting that real-time support. So it's that sort of thing. But also if you had to get your bank card, you know, read out for whatever reason because you can't read it and no one else around to support you, there's those sort of questions as well. And the unfortunate thing is that the world is not accessible for us because we still have being designed, you know, we've got the PDQ machines where you pay, they've done with a touch screen, for example, you know, and that sort of breaches your trust because if you're in a shop on your own, you can't, how can you use that? Because you can't put the PIN number in as touch screen. So then you either don't buy that or you have to tell someone your PIN number. So I think you're always going to have an issue around privacy, but I think it's, you know, what do you need most? Do you need the support most? And, you know, do you take that risk?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just about that trade-off, isn't it? Yeah. It sounds like.
So how did you get on at the conference, those of you who went? What were your favourite highlights or were there anything that stood out for you? So Callum, what was your highlight of the conference?
I think for me, it's just the usual case of, I say this all the time, but the usual case of being able to get hands-on with everything. With, you know, with some of this technology. I mean, I managed to, I think I said a few weeks ago, that I managed to get a bit of experience, albeit about 5 minutes, with the dot pad, you know, like the multi-line braille display. And the reason I always go on about it is because these are not cheap. Like, these are not cheap devices. And even if you're getting funding for them, which you probably are, there's a limited amount of funding you can get. You know, so you've got to pick your product of choice pretty carefully. And, you know, you can't just go into a Currys or a Best Buy, wherever you are in the world, and try these devices out. There's not many opportunities, really, to have a look at things like that. So I enjoyed getting hands-on with that. And I enjoyed just speaking to some of these companies. I mean, I had a very brief chat. It wasn't recorded, but I had a very brief chat with the guy from Meta who was there giving that presentation that we'll be hearing in a minute. And, you know, just the chance to actually speak to these people. I mean, if you ever try getting in touch with Meta or Facebook or whoever, it's a nightmare, especially them being able to get in touch with, you know, the accessibility team as well. So for me, I mean, it's just it's been able to get hands-on, but it's the conversations you can have as well and the connections that you can make, to be honest.
What about you, Hubert? What was your highlight or anything that stood out for you?
I think to go on Callum's point, it's to be able to talk to these companies. I had a long chat with Augustia from Meta, and he was excellent to talk to because you can hear from all these people the passion they have for the work they do. And a lot of these people also have personal links in one way or another to making technology accessible, which I think adds to it and adds to the reason why this technology works so well. And it's good to see mainstream tech companies like Meta, like Google, and amongst some that were present, you know, committing to accessibility and putting it at the forefront of their work as well, and not an afterthought. But it was also good to kind of see the specialist technology still very much thriving in its own way as well. So, you know, you had a bit of both types of technology to experience. You know, Caesar the guide dog enjoyed racing with Robbie the guide dog, even though he did lose that race, unfortunately. but, you know, he's forgiven, I think.
That was funny, that.
What about you, Natalie? Was there anything that stood out for you, or is there any one particular memory that you have of the conference?
Yeah, I'm annoyed myself that I didn't get hands-on with the dot pads. I didn't realise that was there because I would have enjoyed that. But I did have a go with Robbie, the robo guide dog, and I was a bit sort of not dubious at first, but I kind of thought, this is exciting, but Robbie the guide dog seemed to be guiding me, not the other way around. When I spoke to the developers, they explained that they thought it would be good for the likes of museums or shopping centres or places like that. And I thought, now that I can get behind. You know, you go into a big shopping centre, you pick up your guide dog, your Robbie the dog, and you program into it. You say, I want to go to, you know, whatever shops, and it takes you, but it also maybe takes you in the most logical order, you know, rather than walking round and round in circles. So I thought that was really exciting. I really liked the look of that. It's not there yet, I don't think, because it's quite slow and different things, but I thought that's something I can definitely get behind. The other thing was not so much tech related, but there was a really interesting lady who is a blind astrophysicist, and I was just sort of blown away by that. I thought that is amazing. And I got to, she had some 3D models of the galaxy, basically, created from sounds and everything. And it was just, it was incredible to think that actually we will think without any malice that obviously a visually impaired or a blind person can't do these things, you know, let's be realistic here. But her demonstration was all about the fact that actually using sound technology was more accurate than relying on the human eye. And that just blew me away. I thought that was incredible. And I found her very impressive. She had a really nice manner and I found her very impressive.
Well, it sounds like there was a lot there to see, and I can't wait. Hopefully next time I'll be able to be there for the duration.
No, it was good. And going back to what I was saying earlier about conversations, I think something that's important to mention as well is that it's so easy, I think, to look at a company like Meta or Google or Apple. I mean, Apple weren't there, but, you know, just to give examples of big tech companies, it's so easy to look at them and go, oh, look at this app is still inaccessible. You know, they've not fixed this and this still doesn't work on TalkBack, and they're not listening, they're not bothered. Well, actually, you speak to these people who are actually doing that job, and you really can tell the genuine passion that they've got for their work. And I've worked in accessibility for a large organisation for a couple of years. And it can be a bit of a soul-destroying job, if I'm honest, because you've got so much passion. You know why accessibility is so important, but sometimes getting the company to see that and getting the other developers, the other colleagues to see that is is often the challenge. So, but these people are genuinely working so hard to deliver that and to make that access, you know, to make it accessible, to give you that great experience. And you really do see that when you speak to them in person. It kind of restores your faith in them, I suppose.
Absolutely, Calum. And I think as well, it's good to remember when we are faced with some of these things, is people don't set out to make things inaccessible out of malice.
Yeah.
You know, there's not some evil genius sitting somewhere going, ha ha ha. It's out of ignorance or speeds or budget cuts, or there's hundreds of things. It's not that there aren't people who care. It's sometimes it helps just to sort of breathe and remember that even when you don't want to kill.
But no, it was a fantastic event. Gutted you couldn't make it, Jackie, but yeah, fingers crossed for next time.
This presentation is from day two of the Inclusive Design for Sustainability Conference, and in this presentation, Augustia Mehta, Director of Reality Labs and Hardware Engineering at Meta, talks about the link between AI and wearables.
I will give you a quick intro of my background, and then I'll talk through a few areas that I find to be very top of mind in the world of consumer electronics and technology. I'm Augustia, or Gus for short. I lead a team at Meta that is called Concept Engineering. And what we do is we build early prototypes of our devices and our wearables roadmap, augmented reality roadmap, and on the AI front. I myself have some vision issues. My mom is blind, and some others in my family also do. In my case, I've wrangled with congenital cataracts, glaucoma, hypotony maculopathy, and a few other issues. And I think this perspective has helped inform the direction I've taken my career. My technical background is physics and electrical engineering. I studied those at MIT, and then I followed up by working on consumer hardware devices like Xbox, iPhone, HoloLens, some self-driving car startup work, and now wearable AI. All of these choices in my career have been somewhat informed by my background. I'm a strong believer that all of these technologies aren't just exciting and fun science fiction come to life in their own right. That is true. But I think they have an amazing potential to connect people to one another and to the world, especially people who otherwise have been left behind, including people who are blind and low vision. When I generally talk about this topic, it's usually to an audience that needs to be informed and made aware of the problems the community faces. And so this is a unique opportunity to talk from the other perspective with people who already are believers and understand it, which is really good. And I'm really excited to be able to collaborate and maybe get some more ideas on how to share this message to a wider audience. Next one. So I'll do my best to do some live description of pictures. Here's a 90s throwback. The picture above was taken about 30 years ago. It's a picture of my mom, her first guide dog, Amber, which amusingly shares the name as my wife, whom I met a few decades later, to much entertainment among our family. In addition, there's a much younger Gus aboard the USS Nautilus submarine. So in this picture, Amber is helping mom navigate the submarine safely while I'm goofing around. And I would say, even though this is many decades ago, this example of multimodal canine intelligence, I'll call it, not artificial, assistance, I would say is still outperforming technology-driven solutions. And for most tasks, I think it's still the state of the art. I do think that wearable devices paired with the amazing advances in AI that have happened recently are soon going to provide the same level of quality in a more scalable way, though perhaps less adorable way. All right. So zooming out for a bit, I wanted to talk through a few examples of how assistive tech has evolved over the years from my perspective. Most of the audience here, I'm sure, know very deeply about this, as you've all lived it as well. And I, of course, would love to chat more after the talk to get your experiences too. But I'll talk through at least things I've witnessed firsthand or secondhand through Mom. So going back in time a bit, 70s and 80s, many aspects of society are unfortunately were quite closed off to folks who couldn't see. But I would say that a lot of products, household appliances, many things were designed with features like physical buttons that felt really good when you pushed them. They made a sound as well, or tactile features that let you know when you set a dial to a given position. And these weren't necessarily features designed for the blind and low vision community specifically, but my hypothesis at least is that for products that have been around for decades or centuries, there's been enough design iteration for these products to have incorporated universal design concepts across all the physical senses. And this hits on a thesis I think Dr. Webson mentioned in his talk and I feel very strongly about, which is that universal design is good design for everybody. Landline phones, shortwave radios, computer terminals, even early personal computers and terminals to mainframes, they all were largely usable without vision because they had mechanical buttons, keyboards, tactile features for input, audible output. Even as computing started taking off, my mom was writing code back in the 70s. Early speech synthesizers like the DeckTalk, they didn't sound as nice as Siri, but they paired effectively with the command line interface. And my mom was often the first in our family to hear about world events before the internet took off. She'd get shortwave radio news from around the world, well ahead of us Americans. I remember still waking up early in the morning, and my mom was telling us they'd cloned a sheep, and I had no idea what she was talking about. And it was like 2 days later before that percolated to U.S. Television broadcasts. So if we go forward a little bit, we've got the 90s and 2000s. So that's when the submarine picture was taken, and it was a big inflection point for technology, an exhilarating time. We've all lived through it, but also lots of challenges. We faced the difficulties of transitioning from command line interfaces to graphical user interfaces, something that's widely lauded as something that broadened computing to the masses. In my opinion, it was actually a step backward for at least my mom and others in the blind and low vision community. There were early screen readers that worked with early versions of Windows and OS 2 and the like. These often had a very steep learning curve. They were niche. They often broke the operating system and extremely expensive in most cases. I still remember, you know, early copies of JAWS that, were like in the order of thousands of dollars, which is just not attainable for the general user. So at this point, Mom generally relied on the non-canine family members to read books, news, and other written material. And as internet started replacing shortwave radio and things like widespread broadcasts from each country waned on shortwave, she actually lost some independence. So then we shift to the 2010s. And we had some initial trepidation because as touch screens started taking on, I thought, oh, here we go again, another interface that's going to be hard to use without vision. But I actually have been pleasantly surprised through this transition. Mobile web standards started actually making the internet a little bit easier to ingest with screen readers. Technologies that became widespread in the late 90s, like Flash, simply didn't work on small phone screens, and so they kind of got abandoned. So sort of serendipitously, that helped visually impaired users. And mobile accessibility went well beyond expectations, at least my expectations. I'd have to give a shout-out to Apple. The VoiceOver product was both integrated with the operating system, which is huge. It means not having to pay extra money. And I think they did a phenomenal job in incorporating the touchscreen, not just as a visual interface, but as a gesture-based interface that one could use without looking, like the rotor, braille input. These are all, I think, really cool innovations that were a departure from the traditional method of, like, look at something and poke at it. The smartphone era was a big revolution because you had access to a computer in your pocket, but there's still some problems. High friction, the sorts of devices that started becoming wearables at the time, some of them adopted OCR and some really early traditional computer vision-based description, but they couldn't describe things in rich detail. Most things were not hands-free, or if they were hands-free, they were clunky and expensive. They were often thousands of dollars. And products in this category are very tech-heavy and definitely not attractive to wear. And a lot of blind people just don't have access to this sort of thing. So pictured in the imagery, the first step was a reproduction of the picture of my mom and Amber and myself, along with a shot of the Kurzweil reading machine, which I'll get to in a second. That was sort of like the old school tech. Stepping through the 2010s era, I have a shot of a person using a mobile device and a pair of glasses with the Oricam camera. And I do want to be clear, I'm not throwing shade at Oricam. It was an amazing device, and I think a lot of great work went into it. But again, just high cost and something that just out of the reach of most people. So now we come to the era of today, the 2020s. And in my opinion, advancements in AI, they've sparked a lot of conversations in the mainstream press about how technologies can profoundly impact how people interact with the world. Some of it is hopeful. Some of it is fearful. Is technology going to take away work and take away jobs? I actually have a strong opinion in the opposite direction. I think it's going to empower people to get employed that previously didn't have access to the job market. I think it's going to create jobs for many of us in the blind and low vision community. So there's coinciding advancements, and I think this is where the magic's happening, in wearable technology. And so I think that puts us in a very unique moment in history. I think we're going to have a change as profound as the advent of the internet, if not greater. Mobile applications leveraging AI already are available that can not only read text but describe objects and scenes. Products like Seeing AI, which I had the pleasure of collaborating a bit with back when I was at Microsoft. Products like Be My AI, and Be My Eyes is focused on that. And even integration into the operating system is the wonderful folks that Google mentioned yesterday in their talk in the operating system on Android, and Apple's adoption of similar in iOS. But phone-based interfaces are still not perfect. They're a little bit clunky. You have to point the phone at what you want to be described, which isn't always trivial, and your hand is being used when it could be otherwise doing something else. So I think pairing wearables with AI is going to profoundly connect a ton of people, both in the blind and low vision community and just across the general population. And I think through this pairing of technology, we can start making accessibility ubiquitous. I think that the innovations here are going to enable us to make universal design at a scale that was never before possible. And I'll talk to that in a minute. I don't want to toot Meta's horn too hard. Of course, I'm proud of what I work on, and I think we've done some really cool stuff. But I do believe very strongly in the Ray-Ban stories and now Ray-Ban Meta products, not just as mainstream consumer tech that's cool and fun and stylish, but also as a product that I think is going to empower a lot of people and already has. So when we launched Ray-Ban Meta in 2023, these are devices that are hands-free. They look great. They're discreet, so they don't necessarily announce to the world that there's something to be attention called to. For people that want to just be fashionable, they look good. They allow a level of independence that I think had not been before possible. In regions where it's available, the multimodal AI features can describe scenes, currency, mail, menus. Even in regions where it's still yet to roll out, you can capture video, communicate with friends hands-free, listen to music. But this is just the beginning. There's a ton of opportunity across the entire space, not just at Meta. And I'm hoping the industry starts taking this on more. So I'm going to transition to a couple thoughts that I've given when giving these talks to like the more tech-focused big tech audience, including people like my leadership. And I'm not doing this to preach to the choir because I think the points I'm going to land are all very well understood and championed by everyone here, but perhaps to solicit some more thoughts and advice on how to communicate these messages forward. So again, would love your feedback afterwards. Two big points I've tried to land when discussing accessibility and universal design to my leadership and to leadership at other tech organizations are as follows. The first is that accessibility is important. It's the right thing to do, and it's a good thing to do. It empowers a ton of people. According to the World Health Organization, 1.3 billion people across the world have a disability. And many more have limitations that don't fit in that umbrella traditionally. In fact, I would contend that because of the stigma associated with disability, there's a large number of folks in the aging population that definitely could benefit from technology that connects them to the world, but are not necessarily interested in flagging attention to it and maybe admitting that they have disability. Personally, I think that's not the approach I would take when I'm in that position, but it is an approach many people take, and we have the opportunity to help them. But when I land this message, I talk through that it's not just altruism, because as we know, capitalism doesn't always just reward that. The bonds of trust that companies build with their customers pay dividends over the long term, both for the business and the tech industry as a whole. I think there's some examples of this in the industry. I think that Meta's decision to open Llama and make it open source to the world is a good example of something that, like, we didn't need to do that and probably are giving stuff away for free. But we're not just doing it to be nice and friendly and altruistic. There's part of that, but it's also good for the industry as a whole and it builds trust with customers. I think if I compare another company that's done a great job at this, I would say Apple has really added privacy as part of their branding. And customers are responding to that, and they buy products from that company because they built trust there. So the point is that it's not just about being good and scoring points. It's actually good business. And there's a bigger business opportunity than I think many folks realize. The second point, which I think is news to a lot of folks, is that this type of work is actually good tech investment for the sake of tech itself. An example I'll give, and pictured here, I'll describe it, is the Kurzweil reading machine. This is going back to our, you know, early era of technology from a previous slide. I learned this story from Mike Shabanek, who was our former head of accessibility at Meta and a champion of accessibility work. He was one of the early drivers of VoiceOver at Apple and just an awesome guy in general. He told me the story at a recent summit, and so I want to give him credit because I didn't know it beforehand. But Kurzweil's reading machine was a system that Ray Kurzweil, who's a famous technologist and big proponent of the singularity, he created this in the 1970s to provide access to books for the blind and visually impaired. Through this effort and in his partnership with Bell Labs, three core technologies that are now widely used across tech were invented. The CCD flatbed scanner, basically the first good flatbed scanner. Good font agnostic OCR, optical character recognition. Previous to this, you had to use fixed width typeset font, and even then it was quite unreliable. And the first intelligible, high-quality digital text-to-speech synthesis. Like, these are all not just good things for the disabled community. They're core technologies upon which our phones, our computers are based on. And so when I land this point, this isn't the only example, but I think it's a really good one because it knocks three out of the park. It's not just a hallmark accessibility device. It results in innovation. And I think that in our current era of AI and wearables, there is a ton of potential to make similar impacts in the industry. A very low-hanging piece of fruit, which I have tried to land to my colleagues and leaders, and with some success, but could use more, is the user interface doesn't need to demand the eyes. The user interface can become agnostic to the senses. And this is good for everybody, right? If I'm driving a car and I want to get information about something, I don't want to look at a touchscreen, even if I can see, because it's dangerous to take my eyes off the road. And so it would be really nice if, when I don't want to use my eyes, I can get the information. I think once we shift to that type of human-computer interaction model, which AI has the ability to really enable, we're going to be bringing a lot more people to the table and connecting a lot more people. So building features that empower users with disabilities, they make better products for all users, and they spur innovation for all users in the future. Pictured here is, at least in the US, what we call a curb cut. It's basically a divot in a sidewalk that connects the sidewalk to the road. And at least in the talks I've given, I often will pull this example because I think it's a really great metaphor for the principle of universal design making products better for everybody, the curb cut principle. The eponymous example here is that curb cuts, which were largely spurred and incorporated into urban planning due to regulations to support people with disabilities, have provided a huge benefit to everybody, right? If you've ever used a stroller or a pram or a shopping cart, it's just makes it easier to get around. There is a lot of examples like this. I touched on some of them when I talked through landline phones. The bumps on the F and J key on the keyboard, they weren't placed there because there was some legislation that said, hey, you need to put bumps on the keyboard to support blind users. It was a better design for a keyboard because you don't always want to look at the keyboard. Another really good example of this is closed captioning, which, again, started out as a technology to empower the deaf and hard of hearing community to have access to Audible content. But it's widely used by the general population, including myself. I hazard anyone to try to watch a Christopher Nolan movie and understand the dialogue without cranking the volume up to a point of damaging your hearing, without either having somebody read you what is going on or having some sort of captioning for the dialogue. I think the principle that really hits home for me is that disabled users are users first. It's important not to think of them as an other category or as some cohort that some other company is taking care of. Because fundamentally, first off, often that's not true. And secondly, when we think about products through only the lens of what we consider our traditional market, we're actually doing our own products and our product growth a disservice. So pictured here is one of my favorite pictures from earlier years growing up. It's a shot of my mom and Kovacs, who is one of her her third guide dog, actually, standing at a cliffside in Big Sur, California. There's a sign that says, danger, unstable cliff, stay back. And Kovacs is looking intently at the sign. If one were not aware of dog's ability to not read, one might think that he's reading the sign to her. I love this picture because it touches on two things. One, guide dogs are awesome. My friend Amos, who founded Glidance, and I talk a lot about this, and we joke about putting guide dogs out of work, and I'm torn over it because I love them. But I think that there is still one key limitation, right? So, and this is where AI comes in. Current solutions for accessibility and empowering people with understanding the world when they can't see, they tend to be high touch, labor intensive, and not scalable. What I mean by not scalable is that guide dogs can do a heck of a lot of really great work, but there are only so many dogs in the world. There are only so many trainers. The cost of training one is quite high, even though most schools absorb that through charitable donations. There is simply not going to be a world where every person who could leverage the use of a guide dog could have one. And even if that were the case, not every blind person wants a dog or wants to take on the responsibility of caring for one. And it just gets even worse when you think about human assistance, right? I mean, there's a whole labor market involved with economics that simply don't work out right now. Contextual AI removes human labor from a lot of tasks that were intensive. Things like labeling images, creating alternative text or alt text for images, creating closed captions. Video description is now starting to become a thing. Contextual awareness, meaning you can understand the scene, the layout of a menu, where it's safe to walk. If someone walked away and you're now talking to thin air, which happens to mom all the time, and sometimes even to me because my peripheral vision isn't great. If you combine these sorts of concepts that previously required a human in the middle, which can now be leveraged by large language models, and incorporate them with wearable technology, advanced sensing, things like EMG input that could allow you to input stuff to a computer without needing to touch or hold anything, then you're going to start empowering a whole lot of people that previously have no access to the world. Multimodal AI, which means incorporating multiple feature sets into the output, is another huge step forward. There are already solutions on phone. Like I mentioned, they're starting to empower us. But there's some drawbacks, like holding and aiming the phone. And when we combine it with wearables, I think we have the potential to make this stuff ubiquitous. To go back to the example of Kovacs, spatial awareness, scene understanding are things he's really good at. But OCR, which ironically was an easier technical problem, is something he still hasn't cracked. So I really think that we're at a point where we may be able to give independence to folks and not have to have them ask other people, especially, like I mentioned the panel yesterday, things that they might be embarrassed to ask about. There's a whole heck of a lot of things where I might be comfortable asking an assistant, like reading a restaurant menu, showing me where the bathroom is or how to get to the toilet once I'm in the bathroom, not necessarily something that I want to ask somebody's help on. And I think that's really where AI has a potential to help a lot. So pictured here, I want to do a quick chat about sort of the grounds-up culture at Meta and how we've been able to get at least some progress through work we've done. So pictured here is my colleague Sophia. She's blind. She's a UX researcher within our Horizon group. And she helped make the initial demonstration of multimodal AI on wearables happen. Note that I didn't say the initial accessibility demo, although it wasn't accessibility. This was actually the first demo to our leadership of AI and wearables. Before the AI hype took off about a year and a half ago, internally, we had been working on strategy and ideas to incorporate into our wearables roadmap to empower blind and visually impaired people. And so we created a hackathon project where we incorporated, I can admit it now, the Microsoft AI stack with an earlier version of the Ray-Ban Stories glasses and a phone using VoiceOver. And we showed how a blind user can get information about text, about the world around them, without needing to get a human assistant. And like I said, this was before all the AI hype took on. So when our leadership saw it, of course, they were really impressed and happy about it. But I think it also highlights the point that the application, this sort of application, which in the public press is sort of marketed as, oh, that's kind of cool that blind people like this product. We weren't expecting that. Internally, this is something that at least folks close to this issue have been championing very heavily. Internally, getting this hackathon project up when it did actually helped us set us up for success in shipping the multimodal AI feature to the general population once that did become part of our roadmap and AI became forefront. I'm going to skip. I had a video that I was going to play here, but I'm going to skip it because I want to be cognizant of time. And I basically just talked through all the important parts of it. And also, the video wasn't audio described, unfortunately. So I'm going to skip to something that I think has also been really fun and exciting. And the intent isn't to just pat Meta on the back. We have a long way to go and a lot of progress to do. But at Connect 2024, which is our annual conference where we talk all things technology in our future, we launched a partnership with Be My Eyes. They've been such an amazing partner to collaborate with. I think most of you are familiar with Be My Eyes, a product that already previously existed on phone to connect volunteers, sighted volunteers with blind users to describe things. Getting the feature onto a wearable hands-free form factor has been really good because there's a lot of friction, like I mentioned, to aiming the phone in the right place. But the thing I feel really great about is this is the first time I saw a senior executive at a big tech company talk about accessibility. So pictured in this slide is Mark Zuckerberg on stage with a slide talking directly about Be My Eyes and Be My Eyes' incorporation on Ray-Ban Meta. For I think everyone in the company that had a passion for this space, it was like an amazing moment and a good moment for the industry as well. Because when people like Mark talk about this stuff, there's a follow-on effect, and I think the industry starts realizing that it's important. I do want to show one video, one commercial, which I found extremely fun when we unveiled the Be My Eyes partnership. And this one is audio described, so we'll go ahead to that one.
I have a very strong sense of identity in my blindness.
A woman puts on a pair of Ray-Ban Meta glasses. She grins. The glasses have a sleek black frame and an integrated camera.
One of the misconceptions that people have about blind people is that we don't care about how we look or the way we present ourselves to the world. The Ray-Ban Meta glasses allows me to still look fashionable and be able to do the task that I need done as a blind person.
Hey, Meta. Call a volunteer with Be My Eyes.
Calling a volunteer.
Hey there. How can I help?
Hi, I just got a new record player, and I wanted to see if you could help me figure out which of these buttons turns it on.
Absolutely. I think it's the one on the bottom. Try that.
This one here?
Yeah, that's it.
Perfect. Thank you.
She moves to the rhythm.
Being able to connect with a human through the Be My Eyes call feature makes a world of difference.
She looks through some letters.
How can I help?
Hi, I'm going to a salsa night later today.
I'm able to ask follow-up questions and get more detailed information.
Try the next one. Found it.
She holds a salsa night invite.
The benefits to using Be My Eyes through the glasses is being able to be hands-free. As somebody that uses a cane, I love being independent. That makes a huge difference.
Getting ready to party.
Hi, I was wondering if you could just give me a spot check to see if I missed anything.
Yes, I'm taking a look. You look amazing. It looks perfect.
Oh, thank you so much. Woo!
Some of her friends also use the Ray-Ban Meta glasses.
I'm already like a very active, extroverted person, and I feel like the glasses help me be able to be that even more. I think the Ray-Ban Meta glasses will make a huge difference in people being able to use the tools that they need to live the lives that they want to live.
It's also the night away. Meta logo, a blue infinity sign, Be My Eyes logo, a group of lines of different lengths placed in a circle.
So, yeah, I love that. And I've been super, again, I've been super empowered getting to know the folks at Be My Eyes better through this too. We were initially hoping to do like a co-presentation, but the timing didn't work out for them to travel here, but just wanted to give them a huge shout out again. So closing off, I have a couple thoughts. First off, this is only the beginning. Like, there's a lot of work to be done. I'm under no illusions that the products that are out there are perfect. I think a number of us in these talks have mentioned that when accessibility is incorporated at the end stage of product development, it's kind of too late. We need to think about these design aspects from the beginning. One phrase that landed, and Fan helped me. Fan is one of my team members. He leads the accessibility innovation pillar on my team. He was actually the assistant voice on that commercial that was giving Conchita help on getting ready for Salsa Night. One of the phrases that he's really hammered home to me through his work in this space is nothing about us without us. The idea being that there's a patronizing view that, you know, a sighted person will build something to help empower those poor blind people and connect them. One, that's patronizing and kind of dumb, but two, even beyond that, it results in things that aren't super helpful, right? Like the classic example is, you know, someone's walking down the street using a cane across, and then like a sighted person grabs them and manhandles them across the street, right? Maybe the intent was good, but it was not helpful. I think often just saying things that seem blatantly obvious to people in positions of power can have a really big impact. There are a ton of people that I talked to in the progress of trying to incorporate accessible features into Ray-Ban Meta inside the company, and I'm not trying to slight them at all, that we're just surprised that blind people would want to buy glasses because they can't see, which is dumb on a number of levels. One, there's a huge swath of people who are low vision and can see, and two, like, why wouldn't you want to wear glasses? Another common misconception I fight is, oh, well, there's already something out there for them, like, and if we incorporate that into our product, it'll add cost and time and money, which, again, I think is only generally true when you incorporate stuff at the last minute. If you incorporate it in the beginning, it actually makes the product better. So I really believe in nothing about us without us. I know you all do too. And so my intent in bringing this up isn't to preach to the choir, but I think we all need to find ways of, sorry, I didn't advance the slide there. We need to find ways of getting ourselves involved in product development. So I think it's important for us to think about like how technology can power us to be independent, which we talked through in this talk and a number of others. Think about how it can help us be connected. Think of it how it can help us be fulfilled. And I think closing off with that thought, I'd love everyone to reflect upon ways they can influence people in their lives to help on this front. In my case, getting directly involved in engineering development on the product, even though my day job initially was not accessibility, has been my mechanism for trying to up-level things. I think many folks in the technical field could do similar. I think people in non-technical fields can also do a lot of really great work in championing this cause and empowering others. Would love to chat more with folks in the community. I have learned a ton at this conference and have met a lot of really amazing people. I loved the panel yesterday and the questions. I think time-wise, I won't have time for live Q&A today, but I will be around throughout the rest of the day to chat. And if we don't get a chance to connect live at this conference, would love to connect externally. My contact information is, I think, shared in this document and if in the materials. And if not, it's just my first name at meta.com. Just a coincidence that Meta and my last name, Meta, sound the same. I'd like to say they named after me, but unfortunately it's not the case. So again, thank you so much, everyone. That's a wrap for me.
That's it from us this week. Thank you so much for joining us. If you've got any thoughts, comments, questions, suggestions, anything you want to talk about, get in touch with us. We always love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is how you can get hold of us. We'll be back, same time, same place, next week. But for now, from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.